Cue the music! Dun, 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 coming to you from the lovely and talented city of Green Bay, Wisconsin, I am Kevin McLeod, and across the table from me, 758 miles away in New York City, Mr. Brian Teo. Brian, how's it going today?
It's freaking awesome. I am hunkered down in my apartment, not talking to people, and it's basically all I've ever wanted in my entire life.
We just came off of 45 minutes of trying to get the tech working, and it's not, but we have enough redundancy to work around it.
Right. As it turns out, the fix is just to add more technological devices. Speaking of which, I have made the potentially foolhardy decision to build a Hackintosh.
They're known to be fiddly.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, I actually thought that I could do it. There's a new method, a new old method, I guess old new method. There's a different method.
You didn't get a pre-built Hackintosh then. You're building your own one. Okay.
I bought the parts. I did a little research, found out what should be usable, and I ended up following some guides and nothing worked out. However, in theory, this should be okay. I'm using a method called the vanilla install, which basically takes all of any edits to the operating system and keeps them in an EFI folder, which is like a pre-boot volume. So basically, I don't touch the OS at all. Everything is like kept separate. So if there's anything that fails, at the very least, I'll basically have a hard drive with an operating file system and operating system and all of my shit still on it, and that is uncorrupted. And I could, in theory, plug that into a working Mac and it will be fine.
Okay, but it doesn't work currently.
Okay. The thing is, like, once I get it to work, it'll be stable as shit, and I no longer have to worry about it.
I mean, you could just get the new Mac Pro. What's that going to be? $36,000, I think, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just wanted to challenge myself, which is the only reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I have $36,000 that I could spend.
Oh, yeah, easily. Everyone does. It is known.
I'm doing this because I had a job that came up that required me to have one single very powerful computer instead of my network of mini computers, which I am currently running. I guess, which is probably another topic of conversation for another day.
Disney. We got a Disney job.
You can't say that. The mouse will chop your balls off. But yeah, it's a huge problem. Yeah. And I have wasted a lot of money. The first motherboard that I bought, I got on eBay, and it was borked. He basically wrapped it in a bunch of Amazon bubble envelopes and then put it in a box.
Oh, and then when you put it together, it didn't?
Oh, I didn't get that far. Oh. It came, and it was bent to shit because it was shipped in a box wrapped with a bunch of bubble envelopes.
Yeah, bent motherboard, not pretty.
Yeah. So the faceplate was all bent up. The pins on the processor socket were all bent up.
Did you send it back then?
Well, he had already put a little earmark on his sale that he doesn't accept returns. So yeah. Now I have to go through disputes through eBay.
Fuck.
They have buyer protection, but they just watch as we go back and forth and then they make the final decision.
Right.
So it was really cheap though. It was like $200, which is why I bought it. And I figured if I was going to be out $200, then that sucks, but it's not the end of the world. Yeah. That I might just have to eat that. Then I bought a new motherboard. That didn't really work out so well. So now I am buying a third motherboard. And at some point, I'm just going to actually sink in the amount of money that it would cost to buy.
It'll still be $36,000.
About $36,000, yeah. As it turns out.
Yeah, I spec'd one up. My main production computer is now 9 years old, 10 years old. I got one of the first trash cans, and it still works.
Yeah, that thing was a monster when you first got it.
Yeah, it still works. I mean, the video has fried on it a couple of times, but they've replaced that for free with similar shitty video, but I mean, it's music production. You don't need a whole lot of video.
I feel like the scope of your productions, though, has increased over the last several years, and you haven't seen anything problematic arise with your current setup?
I have not even come close to filling up that computer, right?
Great. So you're going to be good with that for a while.
Well, I mean, I know that I'm good up to about 200 virtual instruments.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, and it seems to be fine. And this is a 10-year-old machine now. I mean, the thing that you're building, God knows.
How many have you run at your maximum? Because I feel like I could hit 200 pretty easily.
I've only had a couple projects that went 200 plus in the last 10 years. So let's just do the quick update. The Hackintosh, working or not working?
Hackintosh is not working.
Not working.
I've worked on my Hackintosh for the last several days. It's dead. There's nothing that's working. I've gone to all the forums. Nothing is working. I ordered a new motherboard, and that's where we're at. And if that doesn't work out, then I guess I've got a new PC. I know that I'm setting up a somewhat beefier system than most people set up, though,
yeah,
which is the reason why I'm doing it in the first place. So that might be a problem, because everyone seems to be interested in building a Hackintosh for gaming, which just seems really stupid to me.
What?
Yeah. You're taking a PC, you're putting the Mac OS on it, and then you're going to try to load games? It's like, what?
Why? What are you playing? Maelstrom from the 90s? I don't remember the last good Mac game. Myst, maybe?
Myst is pretty good.
What was that, 94? I'm old. I'm sorry, everybody.
I would actually like to try to play Myst on a computer that was capable of running it. Because I remember trying to play those in like the computer labs at school.
Yeah.
And those computers were terrible. And you'd like click the forward button to walk forward a step, and it would take a good 3 minutes to render.
I believe they have a real time Myst now.
Oh.
Where like all the things that were rendered over, like, you know, it took them days to render one scene.
Interesting.
And it's just, you know, in now it's 1/60th of a second.
I mean, the computer actually, the game might actually be playable now.
I remember when we got that game. Oh, diversion alert. We got to have music for some sort of diversion alert, because this was not in the show notes. So when Myst first came out, I had a comic book store in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, which is great. And we set up a computer and we did tag team on Myst. And we were sleeping in shifts to solve the thing.
What?
There was a musical problem that they woke me up for, and it wasn't a musical problem. It was just notes, and they freaked out. But, yeah, there are some parts of Myst that I don't know because I slept through them.
Wait, but you saw Myst to the completion.
Oh, yeah. Nope, we absolutely, and we played through at least three different endings.
I didn't even know there were different endings.
Yep. So Hackintosh, not done, but is moving forward. You have not given up?
Not given up yet, but at this point, losing the battle. But enough about my stupid computer. You had mentioned you got some kind of weird messages in your email earlier. Tell me about that.
Oh. I do get some doozies. I got a couple that I want to talk about. One of them is Muzak.
Wait, really?
The people who make background music have apparently raised their rates.
Aren't they the company that has like elevator music and stuff like that?
Yeah, they were known for their cheesy covers of shit back in the day. But there's so many retail places in the U.S. that still use them. And they just upped their rates at the time when they shouldn't up their rates, because businesses are starting to, let's say, lose their people.
Well, and there are so many other streaming services now that I think some people are using potentially illegitimately.
Like, wait. Illegitimately? Like your hairstylist is using Spotify?
Yeah, which they're not paying royalties on.
Totally illegitimate. They're paying some money, and that's fine. Like, if you go on Spotify, please go on Spotify. Listen to my music. It's all on Spotify. It's not all on Spotify, but much of it is.
That's good. Nice subtle plug.
No, Spotify helps me out, man. It's I think, my number one revenue stream these days.
What, really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because you run ads on Incompetech.com, right?
There are Google ads on Incompetech. However, 60% of the people coming to Incompetech run ad blockers. So only 40% of the people see the ads.
Interesting. So would you say in this day and age that using ads on a website, is that a viable source of income?
No, it's going down and down and down and down and down. And I just got emails today from Google saying that I had violations of their report of their thing. So they're demonetizing as many web pages as they can.
Do we know why?
To increase their profits.
Oh.
Things get demonetized for ghost reasons, basically. And you just suck it up, right?
Oh, yeah. That's your job. So you think that they're demonetizing pages because then they don't have to pay you.
Right. Because they can't sell them. They think they can't sell them. There's... God knows why they demonetize. But yeah, about a third of my site has been demonetized so far.
Which is significant because a third of your site is huge.
That's like 1,000 pages, yeah.
That's an awful lot of pages. YouTubers talk about this a lot too, where the algorithm changes and all of a sudden they start losing revenue. And it seems like it's kind of like a unknowable beast.
Yep. Like if you push toward the algorithm, you will know nothing but pain for the rest of your life. The only thing you can do is provide the highest quality content consistently.
Interesting.
That's the only thing you can do.
It's almost like creative people should just try to do that.
Yeah.
In general.
It's almost like creative people should like create good things.
Yeah. Wow. Shit. I wish I wouldn't have spent all that time at the gym.
Yeah. Don't go to those seminars showing it's like, yeah, you know, if I had more mesothelioma themed music
out of left field,
I would sell a lot more ads.
And you need to make sure to engage your audience. Ask leading questions.
Yes. No, fuck all that. No, just do the best you can. You'll be fine at the end. Or not. But, you know.
I guess failure is always an option.
So that's emails. That's emails I got. I also.
So wait, you got a message from Muzak. I want to circle back on this. You got a message from Muzak. What did they want?
No, I didn't get a message from Muzak. I got a message from a laundromat guy who said that Muzak was just upping the rates by like 35% per month.
Shit.
And that's like his breaking point now. It's like, I'm not making enough in the laundromat business. And then I found your site and what do I need to do? I'm like, yeah, just use it. Just play it, man. It's fine.
So that's it.
Donate to me if you can, but yeah.
So he's now downloading the music that he wants to put on a playlist and that's what he's going to use, or what's the protocol?
That's it.
Interesting.
That's the end of that. And that's saving him, you know, $85 a month.
I mean, do you offer any playlists already that are like pre-made or?
Well, by the time this podcast comes out, let's hope.
So that's the next frontier.
That is the next frontier. I need to make some playlists.
Love it. If this is a problem with this one gentleman, it's safe to assume that this is a problem with other people.
Thousands.
They're no longer going to be able to afford this service.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that this is an opportunity for you then.
Oh, yeah. All problems, you know, there's a, like, oh, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. No, these are real. These opportunities are real. It's like, wait a minute. Why did somebody come to me with a problem? Let's fix it. And now,
interesting.
You know, I might have to write a lot more smooth jazz. You might have to write a lot more smooth jazz. But, I mean, we shall overcome.
You know, there's a part of me that's actually kind of loves that idea. like I'll be allowed to write smooth jazz. Nobody wants to write smooth jazz because they don't want to be the guy that writes smooth jazz. But now you can be like, you know, oh, yeah, I had to write this. It's really stupid. Do you love it? yeah. Yeah, I think it's dumb too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I had to do it for work. So that's just, you know, writing cheesy music can be really fun sometimes, I think.
I don't know. Will cheesy music fly? Probably. Honestly, people don't care. When you're going to the laundro whatever for 3 minutes to pick up your pants, they don't really care. It just needs to be something.
And it seems like there's a disconnect between what people think is good music and what people think is usable music, right? Like, I feel like if I post a track to a website, if it's fun and cool and is trendy or whatever, people like it, but it's not particularly useful in a scoring context as like background music, because it to write a good piece of music, you need to have dramatic change.
Yeah.
And it needs to go somewhere. It needs to build. But if you want to write a piece of music that's going to be used as, let's say, scoring material or background music for some sort of like place of business, if it takes too much attention away from what you're doing, it imposes itself.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, background music is more challenging than anyone realizes. It's like, oh, you just take something interesting and then make it uninteresting. It's like, nope, that's not how good background music works.
Right, and the question is then, how do you end up selling background music? Because I think a lot of people, when they're looking at like different tracks to potentially use, their ear is going to be drawn towards the things that sound cool and fun and just works as a piece of music by itself. But then when they're actually editing, unless they've done it before and they know exactly what they're looking for, they'll be like, oh yeah, this is really hard to use. And it's much better to have something that just has like a single drone going on with some little things sprinkled out.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with percussion.
You can absolutely go wrong with percussion.
But like melodically, you're not going to go wrong too bad with percussion. But
this is an interesting disconnect. When I think of battle music and I think about fight music or things that are used in intense scenes scoring wise, I think of a lot of percussion. Mm-hmm. But percussion tends to cover up dialogue. So if there's any talking, a lot of times there isn't any percussion, and it's weird to go back to some of these old films or shows that I remember having like really epic sections and realizing that there isn't any percussion at all. It's just like hemiolas in the strings or like these stabs in the horns.
Right. It's still got some rhythmic fortitude.
Right. Yeah. But in my head, I still imagine that dung 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 dung. And when I've tried to write like that for different projects, it's failed miserably. And when I first started, I was like, well, can't you just duck the music underneath the speaking? And it's like, well, if you did your job right, you shouldn't have to do that.
So this is a thing. Let's talk about stems and ducking, right?
Great.
When you're doing stuff for a show, you'll typically export like, you know, your string stems, your percussion stems, your brass stems. And when people start talking, they will duck the shit out of the percussion because it gets in the way of people comprehending the dialogue. But if you wrote it right in the first place, you wouldn't have to duck that.
Yes.
Like they would stop, like the percussion stops like, you know, like about 1 to 1.2 seconds before somebody speaks, hopefully.
Ah, that's a good benchmark.
So that you can get this, like, we know something is coming. Like all of music is just telegraphing what the next music is going to be. And so if you pull that out, you know that something is coming, and hopefully it's dialogue, and then you can push that forward.
Have you ever seen a piece of music ruined by the editor?
Probably. I can't think of specific examples right now. Oh, no, actually,
You might not want to.
I can think of absolutely a specific, and he's a friend of mine.
Ed Hamilton, you son of a bitch. That guy ducked the shit out of my music, and he better duck next time I see him. I'm going to send some flying percussion his way in the form of fists. I did get an email from a colleague who was upset that somebody asked him to send them stems. He was like, well, it's already mixed, and there's a lot of stuff that requires side-chaining compression, and I mixed it to be perfect already, so I don't know why they're doing that, and is that normal? I was like, at the time, I actually really didn't know, so I was like, I would probably just give it to them, because this is their project, they just need what they need. And then later on, I ended up finding out that absolutely is pretty standard to give people chunks of stuff.
Yeah, when you're working on like, you know, not local community theater shit, like, it matters. Like that snare coming in too hot, you can't just get rid of that without killing the energy of everything else. But you want to, but you don't want you. Video editors are the best. I love you guys. I love you. I love you so much. You have the worst job in the world.
It's probably more expeditious to do it that way than to have to go back to the person that made the music and be like, hey, I like what you did at this exact second and minute marking or whatever. Yeah. Can you pull down this drum and then hope that they do it enough, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, and you're, I mean, like, so film lock is kind of a joke, right? It's like, okay, we're at film lock. So no more edits are going to be made on this until extra edits are made on that. It's like, yeah, if you're at film lock, you should be able to do it. However, it's kind of, I wish it was real. I wish it was real. Film lock.
I mean, it would make editing things a hell of a lot easier and trying to keep track of which project version you're using and all that.
Film lock happens a lot more concretely in animations than it does in other things.
Well, right. I mean, they have to plan that so far ahead.
Right. It's like, well, we had 150 animators and we needed another half a second. Nope, we don't have that.
Although I have worked on projects where they've chopped out significant chunks of things. They're like, yeah, it just needed to be tightened up. And it's like, whoa, somebody is going to be very pissed about having worked on that scene. Like
That's really the sign of a pretty fucking good project.
What, they're chopping
that
animation?
That they chopped.
Sure. I mean, because they want to make it the best that it can be. Yeah. And they realize that whatever they had wasn't working.
Yeah. And it was painful to make in the first place, but they still left it go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, kudos to them.
Kudos to them. However, you're, I mean, and I'm not complaining because I do have the best job in the world. However, it's not always what you think. It's like, oh, I'll just get, you know, the animatics and score. And like, no, it's not. It's not. They don't. Oh God. Okay.
So one more question that I wanted to ask you then. I have run into this problem where I start writing a piece of music. I know kind of the genre that I want, but I don't really have a name for the piece yet.
Yep.
And so then I just kind of start a project and I save it as something because I don't want it to crash and I have to lose all my work.
Yes.
But most of the time I end up naming my projects basically when I'm done working on them. And then I figure out what the track is about or what sort of imagery it elicits. This is especially if I'm writing like stock music.
Okay.
Less so than when I have a specific project, because if I'm working on a cue for somebody, I can name it after the name of the project
right. Or
the person that gave me the work or whatever. In this case, though, I have some time and I'm just going to write some library music. And I know I'm going to do something that's kind of tense and cinematic or something. I don't know. So I've named so many projects very lewd names or profane names.
Okay, that's...
I'll call like PP Doo-Doo number 2 or something. Okay. And then...
A lot of mine are like February 18, 2017 A.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of mine.
That's a lot more professional. And then if you're looking for that project, are you able to find it again?
No.
Yeah.
How would I find it again? I mean, these are projects that have no purpose in the world. So they just go into my big... thing, and then like about twice a year I go through and open up like 100 to 150 different projects that I've started.
Oh, whoa.
And then name them like, oh, this is a light piano piece.
Oh.
So it'll still be like February 17, 2017 light piano then.
We're both Mac users and Mac OS allows you to tag files with different keywords, which is a feature I've never used.
Yes,
ever.
No one has.
Thank you for saying that.
No one has.
I mean,
ever
it seems
this.
Really useful. And it's a thing that I've thought about. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could just tag this with all these different keywords. So when I wanted to find something like jazzy, I could just look up jazz and find all the things. And it's available and I've just never used it ever. The best way that I can get to organizing my projects is if I've decided what a name is afterwards, and let's say I actually finish the piece and release it, I will make a new folder. I'll label it and then I'll take that entire project folder and then dump that into that folder.
Yeah.
So it's still going to be called PP Do or whatever, but it's going to be within the Sands of Time folder or whatever it's called.
Poo, like PP right 47.
I guess I don't know. I'm mature and everything is just got swear words or stupid references to bodily functions.
Yeah.
Fart track.
I mean, but I actually write fart tracks. So that's.
You have, and it's an amazing
thank you.
They're really good. Like, in fact, I think we should put a fart track in this episode.
I think
maybe right here. And hey. All right, this has been Composer Issues, potentially episode number 1, potentially not, I don't know. So,
episode 0.
I guess until next time, keep writing.